Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Palace and Charlton midfielder, Paul Mortimer. Let's have a chat now with the golf commentator, Kit Alexander, a.k.a. Kit on the Course. Morning, Kit.
Good morning.
Well, that was a hell of a final round, wasn't it?
What a final round. What a week, really. I mean, we were treated to some incredible golf at Augusta. It was remarkable that the names that were up on the leaderboard, the golf that we saw played, loads of birdies, loads of eagles. And then for Tiger to come through and win it was kind of the cherry on the icing on the cake, if you like.
Kit, I've got to ask for you at the start of the week, who was your favourite and where did you rank Tiger amongst those?
Tiger wasn't my favourite. He always has a chance at Augusta, no matter when he turns up. As a champion now, he'll go there for the rest of his life. And he's the type of player that, around Augusta National with experience, whilst he can still hit a golf ball, you'd never count him out because he's Tiger Woods. But he wasn't, for me and for most people, among the real top tier of favourites. You were looking at guys like Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, of course, coming in chasing his Grand Slam with his form. You know, there were a lot of guys that were probably more fancied than him, but he was certainly a serious contender this year with the form he showed in the two majors at the back end of last year, finishing sixth and second in those, and then the little bit of form he's shown this year. He's certainly back. He'd already won again last year in the Tour Championship on the PGA Tour, so he had a legitimate chance, but I think you'd have struggled to find many people who would have listed him as their absolute favourite.
We're just looking at pictures of him now, screaming. A lot of the commentators were saying, and we've been talking about this morning, how different this felt to all the other victories. This felt like a more human victory than the others. Would you concur with that?
I think you're absolutely right. And describing it as a more human victory, I think is spot on. It's his 15th win as a major. I think it's the first major for Tiger Woods, the normal human being. Mm. He was a demigod before that. The aura was what won him tournaments. He was seen as something different, something above everyone else. And all those troubles that you mentioned, the injuries and especially the off-the-course personal stuff that's gone on over the last decade, has normalised him, has humanised him. Now when he steps on the tee, he's not Tiger Woods, the demigod. He's Tiger Woods, the person, because everyone's seen he's fallible. His competitors have seen he's fallible. For him to come back through that and win it yesterday, you really saw what it meant to him. That emotion on 18 was something that we've not seen to that level from Tiger Woods ever, ever before. And it was because it meant more to him. He's lost so much. And to regain it, you appreciate it then the second time around. And having his children there was huge as well. He said that's such a big motivating factor for him. All of the wonderful things he's achieved were when they were either before they were born or very, very young. They weren't really old enough to appreciate it. He's wanted so badly to show them what daddy can do in person, not just on videotapes, not just, as he said, for them, golf. They've always seen golf as hurting him because he's been injured for so long while they've been alive and when he's been trying to have comebacks and he's gone through the surgeries. His kids almost equate golf with their father to hurting Tiger. Now he's got to show them what it's all about, the joy that it's brought him, why he will go down as an absolute legend of the game, and to do it with them watching. You saw that outpouring, not only on the 18th green, but as he came off with the hugs with his family and children.
I loved watching that. I mean, like I say, we've just watched it here and the humanising of him. The thing about all of that, though, is now that, you know, his competitors see that, you know, that veneer of invincibility's gone, the pressure hasn't gone, though. So there's been serious pressure on him as well. His own expectations. You know, we're all talking Tiger, all talking to the point where some of his competitors were at the ump when they kept being asked about him. So as much as it's humanised him, that pressure to succeed is always there, and it probably was ramped up even more.
Absolutely. I mean, that's all Tiger's known his entire life. He's done nothing but win when the spotlight was on him for his entire career. And this is just that resumed, essentially. And whilst the aura is gone, there's no golfer or no sportsman in the history of sport that has ever inspired so many other people and so many future stars to take up the game. Whilst there might not be quite that aura on the course, every other golfer teeing it up is fully aware of what Tiger did. And any of them under the age of about 35 are probably stood there with a golf club in their hands at Augusta Masters because of Tiger Woods, because they grew up watching him, because they inspired him. Now, the aura on the course might not be there, but you imagine you're Tony Finau stood in that final group alongside him. He's your hero. You're watching history unfold, essentially, and you're trying to compete against it. How difficult that got to be. And Ian Poulter said it in his round afterwards. When he fell out of it slightly on the last two or three holes, he got asked, well, what were you thinking on those last two or three holes? He said, well, I was thinking I needed to at least birdie him, but honestly, I was thinking how cool it would be to see Tiger win this.
Yeah.
And you know he was speaking for the entire golfing world because of the impact and the wider impact that Tiger has had on the game as a whole.
Thanks, Kit. Beautifully put. Very, very nice. That's the golf commentator, Kit Alexander, a.k.a. Kit on the Course. That is the point. I was just about to ask him that. Mm-hmm. The weather, when you saw Molinari, they looked disappointed. There's no doubt. Schauffele was playing very, very well. Patrick Cantlay had a chance. But I think they all know that there's a bigger story here. Yeah. Obviously, it's easier for Molinari and one or two of the others who've won major championships because Tony Finau or Cantlay or one or two of the others, they might not ever get that close to winning one again. But, were you there?
Yeah.
You know, if they ask Tony Finau, were you there? Yeah, I was playing with him in the last round, him and Molinari.
I'd give it up just for that. I'd give it up just to witness and be around sort of greatness when it shines like just as brightly as it did yesterday.
And I like Poulter Moore for saying that, for admitting that as well. Wouldn't it be cool? And of course it's cool. Mm. It's cool because, let's be fair, the whole world is talking about
it. And that's in the heat of battle. That's what you like about Poulter. In the heat of battle, he's still a fan. Yeah. He's still a fan.
Excellent. Tiger Woods won his 15th major title yesterday.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie has come in. He's got some stories from inside the newspapers. I'm looking at a picture of Benedict Cumberbatch, who knocked someone off a bike, apparently. And then got smacked in the face.
Yeah, got a slap for it, too. Yeah,
that is a story. We can come to that one. But we like a story about an old retiring animal, don't we?
Apparently
so. Well, we had one about the retiring badger the other day. Should we remind ourselves of it?
Yes.
One here about the world's oldest badger. He's set for a luxury retirement.
Set.
Yeah. I didn't even mean that.
A luxury retirement.
Yeah, he's 20. It's thought that the previous oldest badger on record was 18 and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sadly, he found his death on the A38.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, he shouldn't have been driving at that age, should he? The Prince Philip of the badger world.
I assume this badger is a pet. Well, there might have been badgers that were older, but we're not going to know if they live in the wild.
You can check a badger's age.
How?
Ask it nicely. Not the female badgers, obviously. They get really funny about this. Don't ask the badger his age.
Apparently he's an adorable badger, although he gets a bit grouchy from time to time.
Well, old badgers do get a bit grouchy, don't they?
He's being looked after in East Sussex, a special wildlife rescue centre.
Oh, good old badger.
Good luck to him.
Right. Yeah, good luck.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to Roger.
Is it Roger the badger? Which is a hobby for some people. Get lonely those evenings. But that'll kill it. Yeah, that conversation rather descended, didn't it? Really? Anyway, Roger the Badger.
That was Roger the Badger.
Now, what have we got now?
And this is George the Goldfish, who is the oldest...
40-something!
Oldest goldfish on record has died at 44, yeah.
Do you know what? They say it's the oldest goldfish on record, but we're not going to know, are we? Because, I mean, I remember the kids, we've had goldfish at home as kids, and they would die on a regular basis, especially the ones you got down fairgrounds. They would barely last it for the journey home. But what you do is you go out. I mean, I remember a couple of nights when we had to go out and get goldfish, find another goldfish. The goldfish has died. Mm. Oh, we'll get another one. The kids won't know. And we get another one and put the goldfish in. I reckon this is what might have happened.
I reckon that's what's happened. Six on the bounce, my missus killed. Goldfish. What a serial killer she was.
What'd you do? We used to flush them. Yeah, down the loo.
Didn't eat them, though.
Sorry?
No, you don't eat them.
Well, you can eat other fish. Why can you not eat goldfish?
Have you eaten a goldfish?
No, I haven't.
I never fancied eating a goldfish. No. No, you wouldn't
eat the gold. I can't work out where that's called.
I don't know why there's one fish that people don't eat.
It's your one fish you don't eat. You're absolutely right. But anything else? You want cod? Place? Yeah, that'd be lovely. Goldfish? Oh, you sick, sick individual. Why would you do that?
What is that?
Big pile of goldfish on a plate, like white bait. No, I've never eaten a goldfish.
Right, so but you're questioning the integrity of the owners of this goldfish who say that they've had the goldfish since he was 44.
Yes.
Since he was 44 years. Since
44 years. 40, yeah.
Right.
I mean,
that would defeat the point of the whole story. So you're just saying they're getting in the paper by lying.
I doubt very much that a goldfish can live for 44 years. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe goldfish now is like humans. They're all living longer. Better medical care for goldfish. I mean, I don't know why. Goldfish last about, I don't know, 3 years, 2 years.
That's the point. That's why when you get a really old one, it's a story.
Yeah, but well, 44
Keith,
years.
Yeah, Keith.
This is like the Methuselah of goldfishes. Goldfi.
How long is a goldfish supposed to last for?
Well, yeah. Not
because 44 years, come on. Now.
That's a bit much.
Normally, yeah, the oldest ones tend to live to about 10. Well, this fella, Keith, gave it to his girlfriend at a fair in 1974. His girlfriend at the time was 18. He married her 5 years later. And yeah, the expected lifespan, no more than 10 years. But they've survived 4 decades. Actually, two of them, George and the other fish, Fred, both lasted 4 decades.
I'm not having it. I'm not having it. I think these are replacement fish. These are probably about 8 fish along.
Yeah.
Right now.
And the rest, yeah.
At least.
I suppose, yeah. And you'd have to do some sort of DNA test to actually prove the validity of this if you wanted to make it into the Goldfish Book of World Records.
I mean, I think the other thing is, who cares how old the goldfish is?
Well, he's got himself in the paper, so...
Finally.
Okay. So Keith Allies is...
Which one is Keith and which one is George? And
George
Fred?
Is the goldfish. Keith's, okay. Keith's the old fella who's got an old goldfish.
And Fred's the girlfriend.
Or did have an old goldfish.
Yeah. Is that right? Yeah. No.
Something like that.
Okay.
Something like that. Anyway, he's dead now, so...
Oh, what a shame.
And there were tears all round, apparently.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Do you cry when your goldfish died?
No. Yeah. No. Have they got a really short memory, goldfishes? Do they have like that 30-second memory?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they say that, but I don't know how you test it.
I test
it. Does it come round? Does it like swim round? And when it comes round, and you're looking in, they go, "Who's that?" You're a different owner from the last one who was here. And they swim round again. Who's this bloke? Not a new bloke.
Pretty much. Yeah. That's how they know they've got short memory.
Know?
Yeah, because the goldfish always looks shocked goldfish when it sees you.
Who's this? Where am I? I'm in a different house.
Yeah, that must be how they know. Right. We could be seeing one of the hottest Easters on record.
Brilliant.
The hottest day of the year.
Is it brilliant? It's all global warming. Did you see the marches? The catastrophe, whatever it's called. The extinction event or something they're calling it. And they've been marching all over London. They held up the traffic in the centre of town the other day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
What, protesting about global warming?
Yeah, protesting and saying, and the cab driver's going, "I can't pick people up. You know, it's really ruined my business." And I think, well, I reckon global warming might ruin your business. Flooded high streets, that'll probably stop you picking people up as well. But people, you know, obviously it's just your business, isn't it? You know, yeah. Melting ice caps.
Yeah.
All that. 40 yeah. degrees of heat will ruin your business. Well, you got aircon. You're going to need that, mate, for global warming. I don't know.
Oh, dear.
People
can't
have
just enjoy the nice
concerns.
Weather.
Pardon?
Can't you just enjoy the nice weather over the bank holiday
You're
weekend?
Saying this to me?
Yeah.
I probably will just enjoy the nice weather. But other people will be marching.
Mediterranean plume we've got coming. It's going to be about 22 degrees centigrade and far cry from yesterday's lows of -6.
Where?
Well, I'm not sure where that was.
Greenland.
It was cold where I was, mate.
Was it?
Oh, freezing. Oh,
yeah, yeah, it's been pretty cold. But that's what we've had the last couple of months, haven't we? Freezing cold
it's
and
April.
Then baking hot.
Is there frost on cars in April?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit odd. It's a little bit odd. Anyway, it's going to be warm.
It's going to be warm and we can all enjoy it. Do you want to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch?
Not particularly, no.
Front page of the Sun, this is big news. Benedict Cumberbatch is the story. Ooh. He knocked down a cyclist with his car on a country lane and he was then slapped by the victim.
Who didn't recognise him,
no.
They said. Because if he had recognised him, he wouldn't have slapped him. He'd have gone, "You're Benedict Cumberbatch."
Yeah, but if you knock someone off their bike, why does he get away without a slap it just because he's famous?
Well, I'm not sure people should be slapped. I mean, I don't know the circumstances.
People shouldn't be knocked off their bike.
Well, no. Yes, you're right. That's worse.
Yeah. The 63-year-old bloke was left bleeding heavily from an arm injury.
Ow.
But apparently Benedict just took it. Fair play to him. I mean, he's been in the news before for saving someone from... Was it a carjacking incident or something?
Yeah, it was.
Benedict Cumberbatch got involved, didn't he?
Yeah. Right. Benedict Cumberjack. Yeah. They call him, I'm a Cumberjack and I'm okay. That, yeah, that's what they would do.
I wonder if that was the headline there.
That probably
been.
Was the
oh
headline.
My God.
Anyway,
he's no stranger to road drama, is what I'm saying.
Is he not?
Well, no, because of that.
Right.
And now he's had another
set. Happened again.
Yeah, it's happened again.
All right.
But,
you've got a more interesting story.
Well, you're the one who mentioned it.
I did, right, because I saw the picture.
I thought you wanted to talk about it.
No, I didn't. I'm not in the least bit interested. 44, the goldfish, 44. I'm more interested in the 44-year-old goldfish.
No. Amazing stuff.
Old goldfish.
I'll have some more in a bit.
Old fish, that should have been the headline.
Yes.
That should have been
the headline. Well. I'm not sure what the headline was in that one. Oh, yeah, it was.
Old fish.
It was old
fish. Of course it was. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
We're done. Yeah, we're talking to Gary Gillespie and Graham Storm, current golfer. He's played the Masters a few years ago, in the next half an hour.
Okay, I'm very excited. Have we got any more about
Don't
Benedict
be sarcastic.
You're right.
This is Love Sport.
And we're joined now by another former Palace great. John Sulaco is with us. Good morning, John.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Great. Thank you very much. Now, Paul was a little bit disappointed with the performance of Palace yesterday. I was saying they're up against a very, very good team, but he said it's a free hit and they didn't really do enough. What do you think?
Mort, you're so right. I was with some Palace fans afterwards and they were really disappointed. And I was too. Thought it was a free hit. Big boys coming into town. Look, you know, we're safe. We've got nothing to lose. I think go and express ourselves. Go and entertain that crowd. You know, it's arguably one of the best atmospheres. The fans have been tremendous. And, you know, just, you know, after sort of what's happened with Cardiff, you know we're safe. There's no way they're going to catch us. So, you know, go and have a go and, you know, entertain the boys. But, look, you know, City are a fabulous side and they came to do a job. They were very professional and they got there in the end.
John, talking about Palace, do you think that this is down to how the managers set them out and wanted them to go and play? Because it was very muted. You know, Zaha wasn't in the game at all. Benteke, you know, Batshuayi's on the bench. And that, for me, told me that Palace weren't looking to actually go and be expansive and go and win the game.
It's difficult, Morts. I mean, you've been there. I think basically what's happening, Roy Hodgson and his staff know how to get a result, want the team to play a certain way, and they don't want to dilute that. They don't want to complicate the boys' minds. They don't want us to start thinking things that, you know, living above their station. You know, they know where the results live. They know the important thing is to stay in the Premier League and the practicalities of it. We haven't got a striker at the moment that's going to get 15, 20 goals in Batshuayi or Benteke or AU. Or Conor Wickham. So, you know, that's going to be an area they've got to address in the summer. I'm sure they're already scouting and looking. The rest of the boys know their jobs. So, you know, it's difficult one, Morts, because the practicality of it, as a manager, you're judged by results, you're judged by staying in the Premier League, and ultimately the Palace fans want to be in the big time, which we are again for the sixth season.
Do you think, I mean, I've heard Palace fans talking about it. I speak to Kevin Day and a few others, big mates, and they talk about how Roy's a bit negative sometimes in his team selection. Would you agree?
Do you know, as I said, I think he's stuck with what he's got. You could perhaps label that in, but he'll say, look, you know, I get results and I want to win games or I want to stay in games. And again, some of these big teams, especially the big six, you've got to be practical and pragmatic and, you've got to know what your strengths are and try and, you know, almost nullify their strengths before you can express yours. So, you know, Zaha was so frustrated yesterday. Townsend wasn't in the right positions. The fullbacks never really got forward enough, but that's down to the quality of Man City. You just can't, I mean, they are arguably the best side in Europe at the moment. So, you know, I think Roy will look at it, try and get two or three decent bodies on board for next season and try and freshen it up and try and be a little bit more attacking.
John, I'm looking at, and just as you're alluding to, I'm looking at Leicester, Wolves, Everton, Watford, even West Ham, down to Bournemouth. I know Palace, 6th and 7th place. That's where I'd be looking at Palace. Now, if you're looking ahead to next season, is Roy still the man to be able to push them up the table, or do they need fresh blood, a shot in the arm, different ideas?
I'm also, do you know, I'll take Roy Hodgson all day long. He's done a phenomenal job. And I know he's probably 73, 74 now. He still looks fresh. I mean, he's still got the hunger and the desire. He's got, you know, Ray Lewington's arguably one of the best coaches in the business. He's, you know, Dean Carter, some of the boys he's got in his backroom staff. So, you know, I think it's very much, I think the football's keeping him young. Do you know, as much as I'd like to think, you know, they should be scouting and looking for some fresher blood to take over, I would say definitely Roy for next season and maybe looking for, you know, a Marco Costa or, one of the young, the lad at Wolves is coming and taking it by storm. And, you know, there's so many, you know, Watford have done so well. Djukanovic is probably someone who came in and did a great job at Watford and Fulham. I don't know. Be careful what you wish for is all I'd say to you, Mords. Keep Roy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about two of the other former clubs, Reading and Brentford. They played the other day. Reading 1-2-1. Big result for them.
Oh, massive. Absolutely massive. It's crazy to think Reading are struggling, you know, with possible relegation from the Championship. And, you know, unfortunately for Brentford, they've sort of fallen away at the wrong time. So, you know, although it's been a fantastic... They're looking forward. They're looking up. Well, their stadium looks fabulous. So I think good times ahead for Brentford. You know, for Reading, just got to consolidate and stay in the league and then rebuild for next season.
Thanks, John. Nice to speak to you.
Pleasure, boys.
See you soon. Mate. John Sanarco there, former Palace, Reading and Brentford winger, talking about his former clubs.
This is Love Sport.
Comedy Breakfast on Love Sport Radio. There is a poll that we're running on Twitter about, is this the greatest comeback of all time? There have been a few other people talking about Bob Champion on Aldeniti, yes, that won the Grand National. Bob Champion, by the way, came back from cancer. Yeah. Possibly testicular cancer. I'm not sure. He certainly had cancer. And the horse wasn't well either, by the way.
No,
and they all not. And the horse and the rider came back to win the National. That's pretty good. Someone else was talking about Niki Lauda. Said you can't really compare having the last rights read to you with a bit of back pain. Although I think four spine fusion operations is a little bit more than a... little twinge. Ooh, yeah. But anyway, that's fair enough. There's a poll up there at Love
Hard
Sport Radio
person, that is.
If you want to get involved. I've been saying it all morning. It's a good story.
Yes.
That's what we want. We want good stories in sport. And there isn't really one much better than watching Tiger Woods at 43. At 43. Yeah. By the way, Muhammad Ali, another one, by the way, coming back and winning the world title against George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yep.
And Harry Carpenter doing that famous commentary. He's won the world title at 32. At 32. So when that was very old, as opposed to watching George Foreman when he was 50. And he couldn't even sit down in the corner between rounds because otherwise he wouldn't get up again. Jamie has come in.
Hello.
Jamie?
Yeah, some stories from outside the sporting world. Would this interest you? £150 a head, and it's a five-course pie-tasting menu.
I'm not that into pies. I like a pie. I mean, I'm not against pies. There's an excellent pie shop up the road from Arsenal called Piebury Corner. Do very, very nice pies. But £150 for essentially a lot of pie.
Yeah, this is in Holborn's dining room.
Hoban.
Well, you say Hoban, I say Hoban.
It's Holborn. I say it correctly. Yeah, okay, that's the point.
This is the same as Genoa.
It is, yeah.
Anyway. You two are going to be at it all day.
£150 this will cost you. And you get, well... This isn't just your bog standard steak and ale.
I would hope.
This is rabbit, pork, and pistachio en croûte with a plum.
On what?
Oh, don't!
With a plum chutney.
Oh, it sounds lovely. Listen, it sounds absolutely. I'm sure.
If you love pie.
I'm sure these are very tasty. But £150
with
a lot of money.
With a lobster thermidor tart.
Do you get pudding as well?
Diners.
Have you got room for a pudding after your £150 worth of pies?
You haven't known what your second pie is yet.
Are we going to go through all the pies?
No, just two.
All right.
Potato comté and caramelised onion pie with parsley sauce.
I think that's comped. Actually.
No, it's not.
It's not.
No, it's
okay.
Not. Thanks for trying that.
Oh, for the love of God.
All right.
The accent on the E means he's pronouncing it.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thanks. You do get an apple.
I'm going to make you two go and stand in the corner, by the way. What's going on here?
You do get a pudding, by the way. You get an apple tart tatin. Not tatin, that's a tatin, followed by a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
That's nice, if you've got any room.
Yeah.
Which I imagine no one has after eating all these pies.
I don't know, I think it is quite a lot of money to pay for pies when you could get a nice
£3
one from
£150.
£150.
Well, it's actually 100, sorry, unless you buy the wine, which they recommend with each pie.
They got different wines for different pies.
Oh, yeah.
So they're
mugging
you off with the wine as well.
Imagine if you saw a bottle of wine that said, nice with pie. You'd think,
yeah, wide birth. Yeah.
I'll leave it alone. Yeah. Wide birth, which is what you'll have if you eat all those pies. Anyway, all right, that's happening.
Anyway.
Where's that happening? Holborn. Okay, near Leicester Square, isn't it?
I didn't say Holborn.
Yeah, you
no,
did.
No, it's somewhere between Holborn and Holborn.
Holborn. Okay.
There is another story about Fleabag comedy creator Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yes.
And Daniel Craig has asked her basically to get involved in the next script for the next Bond film.
Apparently so. A lot of people have been through this script, haven't they? Danny Boyle was going to direct it, wasn't he? And then he didn't like it. He was not very happy with the whole idea of it. Oh, really? He wanted David Beckham in a speedboat. And they said, no, Danny, we've done that.
No, he didn't.
Done that. No, he didn't. No.
Why didn't he like it?
I don't know. I thought it was a shame because I'd love to see Danny Boyle do a Bond film. Yeah, I would have absolutely would have been loved something it. Else, I love his movies anyway. I think I really think they're really good. And didn't get involved. But now Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who wrote Fleabag, and a lot of people have been saying how
Killing
good
Eve
it was.
Too.
Killing Eve. So, you know what? She obviously can write the girl. So, good luck to her.
Yeah, fantastic. I didn't realise when I watched Fleabag that she'd also written Killing Eve, which I loved. Yes. But, so very she can good. Do the lot. She can do the drama and she can do the comedy.
Very She's, sharp and witty.
Well, you know what? It's funny you say that. And I'm not going to have a go at you.
Well, thanks.
But
makes a change.
The point is, when you say she can do the drama and she can do the comedy, of course she can do the drama if she can do the comedy, because comedy is just drama with jokes in, all right? And sometimes not even jokes, just funny things.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say that
Do you understand that now? Yeah. Are you sure you got that
The
now?
Point I'm making is that comedy is much, much harder than any other of these written art forms.
Yeah.
And people think it... Back off. Back off. I'm just protecting my particular...
I know you are. Know. That's why I'm making them take the beat, because you're protecting your patch.
I wasn't saying that the comedy's easy and that it's the hard bit is doing the drama. Maybe potentially saying the opposite, that, well, I don't know what I
you don't know what you were
no,
saying.
I don't know what I was saying. I think the fact that both she can do both is exceptional and do both so well.
Anyone who can write comedy can write drama.
No, I don't think that anyone...
Yeah, they can. Anyone who can write a comedy, and I'm not just talking about jokes, I'm talking about narrative.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyone who can write a comedy narrative can write drama because they are already writing drama. Comedy is dramatic.
I understand what you're saying, but to write a comedy that good... And then also be able to write a drama that good is rare. Not anyone who can write a good comedy. If you got to get Steve Coogan to write something like Killing Eve.
Stoney.
Or Amanda.
Relax. Take a breath, my friend. Because the more he's going, I can see the more the steam rising.
I'm fine. I'm
fine. It's a competition. Neither of you is going to win. Let it go.
All right.
Anyway,
thank you, Paul. he's like ACAS, isn't he? He's like the arbitration service.
I'm just looking at your face. Every time he opens his mouth, the steam, I can just see it rising.
Comedy doesn't get a lot of respect, I feel, in terms of, I mean, there's very few comedy films have won Oscars, have won Best Film Oscar. I think people think it's easier than it is. Comedy is hard.
I don't think it is easier than people think it is. I know that comedy is incredibly hard to write.
Yeah. It is. And I think that you know, when you see good comedy shows, it makes it look quite easy, but it isn't. It's painfully difficult. That's the point I was making.
Yeah,
Got anything else less contentious?
See, the drama in here now.
Doing a good
you could
job.
Cut the drama with a knife in here now and make the tension
hard
now,
to write,
between these
hard
two.
Hard to write drama is, isn't it, like this?
See, I'm laughing. That's a comedy. All right.
9:19. No,
I'm sorry, are we done?
I'm looking at Stoney's face. He's gone, mate. He's gone. He's at the other meeting.
This is Love Sport.
Now, Tiger Woods has completed one of sport's greatest ever career comebacks with victory at the Masters. The 43-year-old last won a major in 2008 before his career was threatened by injury and personal problems. He now has 15 major titles, just three behind Jack Nicklaus' all-time record of 18. Kit Alexander, a.k.a. Kit on the Course, spoke to us earlier. He said Tiger thrives on the pressure.
That's all Tiger's known his entire life. He's done nothing but win when the spotlight was on him for his entire career. And this is just that resumed, essentially. And whilst the aura is gone, there's no golfer or no sportsman in the history of sport that has ever inspired so many other people and so many future stars to take up the game.
Joining us now is a pro golfer and a man who played at the Masters in 2000, Graham Storm. Good morning, Graham.
Good morning, guys.
Morning. Well, that was something special, wasn't it?
Certainly was. I don't think many people got much sleep last night after celebrating for Tiger Woods, did they? So it was quite an amazing watch last night.
And we've been talking this morning about it feels different to all other Tiger's victories because it feels like a more human victory because he's not the machine he once was.
No, I think it's quite amazing what he's achieved, where he's been and all the troubles that he's had in his personal life and everything. I think it's just an amazing achievement, and it's just one that everybody will remember, and I'm sure that it'll go down as his greatest ever major victory.
Graham, is it possible for you to give us an idea of what he might have been going through from from probably the 15th hole onwards when he realises you know, everyone's falling by the wayside. If I just keep going, I could win this.
I think he just looks so focused and so relaxed. And one of the commentators mentioned that he'd never seen him chew chewing gum on the golf course. He just looked relaxed, didn't he? It just looked as though it was easy to him. And for him, he will have been going through nerves. He will have been thinking about all his other major victories. Can he pull it off? But all the other players around him were obviously seeing what he was doing and seeing his name go on the leaderboard. And that's the Tiger of old. As soon as Woods' name went onto the top of the leaderboard, everybody just kind of wilted, didn't they? And just seemed to happen the same again.
And tell us about the course, right? Because we watched the course. They were saying that they might have to change one or two of the holes. Maybe 13, I think, or 12, was it? 13, I think. It's 500 yards. But now the players are playing it in a way that it wasn't designed to be played. I mean, what is it about the course that makes it so difficult?
It's the greens that make the golf course so difficult, because you can tuck the flags away. They're so undulated. They're so quick. So it does make it really tough to get at the flags. But I can understand why they would be thinking of maybe lengthening 13. Everybody's hitting the ball so far now that basically the players have turned that hole into being more like a par 4. The only thing that keeps it as a par 5 is the undulating green. But, yes, they need to try and take it back another 30, 40 yards to give the players something to think about.
On the other hand, they got a par 3 that's about 260 yards, haven't they? I mean, it's
yeah,
not easy.
Yeah, they were hitting rescue clubs and long irons into that. It is downhill a little bit. But again, I can see why they've tried to stretch certain holes, because likes of 15 and 13, the two par fives, are so short now.
Graham, is this the kind of thing, listening to you talk there, is this the kind of thing that's going to happen in years to come? Because golfers are finding ways to hit the ball a lot further, that you're going to find, especially on majors, where maybe the golf courses may have to be lengthened or altered or made so much tougher to be able to move in time with how golfers have evolved over the years.
Yeah, I mean, everybody just talks about how far they hit the ball. And the thing is, then they just lengthen the golf course. What they need to do a bit more often is make them a little bit tighter and make the fairways, bring them in, and make the greens slightly smaller, and then tuck the flags away, and then it becomes more and more difficult. Because whenever we go to golf courses that are quite short, quite fiddly, you've got to play with course management more rather than just blasting it miles. The scoring's never quite as good, so there's two ways of looking at it. Yes, keep lengthening it, but then like 95% of people wouldn't be able to play that golf course, where if you keep it nice and tight and a bit like not too short, but you know, tighten it up, make the greens a bit smaller, then it's the same for everybody.
A couple of things about players who didn't have quite as good a week. Rory McIlroy, still, is there something going on in his head now? Is he just too much in his head with this course that he knows it's the one he needs to win to complete the career Grand Slam? It doesn't quite happen for him, does it?
No, I think he's putting too much pressure on trying to win the career Grand Slam. And obviously, Augusta is tailor-made for him for the way that he plays the game as well. So he's just adding pressure onto himself. But maybe watching Tiger Woods do what he did yesterday, maybe he can look at that and think, well, if I just relax a bit more, then my time will come.
And well, I mean, we're talking about the inspiration of Tiger Woods. I mean, we've been saying, we were talking about Ian Poulter when they asked him what he felt like when he dropped shots. And he said, obviously, I'm gutted because I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I had a chance to win this. But he also was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if Tiger Woods could win this competition? Do you think the overwhelming feeling on the course, even amongst the golfers playing for money and for their professional game, would have been thinking, this will be good for all of us in the long run?
Absolutely. Purely and simply, you've just mentioned money. Every player out there wouldn't be making the money that they're making out if it wasn't for Tiger Woods. So, you know, him back in the winner's circle in a major championship at Augusta, you know, golf has just gone to another platform once again, and every TV company will be wanting to air it everywhere, and every radio channel will be wanting to follow it, and it'll just get bigger and bigger and bigger again because of Tiger Woods.
Can he get to 18? Can he beat Jack, or 19, beat Jack Nicklaus?
Well, who would back against him? It's a tough one to answer because 18 majors, I never thought anybody would ever get there, but now he's got the 15, and the way that he just dismantled everybody yesterday, the way that he just came through and just took it over, then there's no reason why he can't do it.
That shot at 16, that tee shot. I mean, how does he do something like that?
He just knows the course inside out, doesn't he? And he just knows where to put the ball, how to hit the shot, what the ball will do once it lands on the green. He just knows everything about that golf course. I mean, I can definitely see him winning at least one or two more green jackets going further forward. Do you know what I mean? It looked easy to him.
Yeah. He's got a feeling about Nadal at the French Open in the tennis, isn't it? He's got a similar sort of thing. He just knows the course better than anyone else. Graham, we'll let you go. Nice to speak to you.
Thanks.
See you soon. It's the pro golfer, Graham Storm there, talking about the Masters. And it's all about Tiger Woods. And you think he has got a feel that he knows that course. Yeah, I mean, that shot on 16, tee shot, he knew exactly where he wanted to put that. He knew the pin position. Yeah. And he thought, right, if I land it there, obviously, you've got to hit the ball 200 yards or so and land it on about a three-foot strip of land, because then it will curl round and roll towards the hole. But he knew exactly what to do.
It wasn't his shot, it was the other two's. That tells you how good it was. They put it close-ish, you know, and you thought, wow, yeah, he's just so much better.
Nailed it.
And that must be so intimidating, because you think, I've hit a great shot. Oh, no. This is better. that's difficult to play against.
Yeah. I guess that is partly what it's about, really. Anyway, we witnessed genius yesterday, but more than that, we witnessed just a great redemptive story.
Yeah.
And that's what we want. There is another possibility of a great story brewing in the Premier League. Liverpool and Man City in the middle of a shootout right now. One wins, the other one wins. It's great to watch. Because we're watching football, a very, very...
As a neutral, wonderful.
We're watching high quality, and it's good to see teams chasing games the way they are. We're joined by a former player from one of those teams, Gary Gillespie, the former Liverpool defender. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, chaps. How are we doing?
Yeah, we're doing very, very nicely. We were talking about the golf form one. That was pretty spectacular. But also, we were switching. I was certainly switching between the golf and watching Liverpool play Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Mo Salah... I mean, we were on here a couple of weeks ago talking about him and saying it's not quite happening for him this season. Well, he seems to have found the switch again, hasn't he?
Well, I think in big games, big players come to the fore, and that's what you want as a manager. Certainly, you want that as a teammate, and he certainly delivered yesterday. You know, it's one of these occasions where so often this season he's been coming inside on that left foot like he did last season and scored a bundle of goals. And for whatever reason, it's not been quite happening for him. He's been hitting it over the crossbar. He's been putting it wide. He's been hitting it straight at the goalkeeper. And yesterday was an occasion when normally when he comes inside, he looks to bend it into the far corner. Yeah. But on this occasion, he just put his foot right through it. And, you know, you could have had like about four goalkeepers in there. I don't think anyone would have saved it right in the top corner. Great goal.
Do you think, though, I often wonder whether ex-players think fans are idiots. And the reason I ask this is because quite a lot of fans, and me included, looked at him this season and thought, yeah, he's not doing it and maybe it's not going to happen for him anymore. But it's obviously different for players. You know the talent. You see him on the training pitch. I mean, did you have any doubt about him coming back and being the player he was last season?
No, I think because you set such high standards, you know, there's only a couple of players probably in world football, the likes of the Messis and the likes of the Ronaldos, that can continue to do the remarkable things that they do by scoring 40-odd goals every season. When you think that he scored 40-odd goals in the previous season, it was never going to be a case this season where he could have matched that. I think he's got 21 or 22 goals. I think he's got something like that all told this season, which for a player that plays in a wide left position, it's not a bad return.
No.
And I think, you know, as players, and I think you always look at your squad and you look within your squad when you're training and things like that, you can appreciate exactly how good people are. And I'm sure there's no doubt about, or there has been no doubt about Mo Salah, that he would get somewhere back to near his best. You know, his performance level has been pretty good over the last few weeks, to be quite honest with you. He just hasn't been scoring the goals. And that's what everybody recognises, the goals. But his performance level has been really, really up there.
Well, Gary, I mean, having played, you and I know that. I mean, you know, all they saw last year was the great goals he scored, and that's what they equated, like you said, to good performances. But what I've found with Mo Salah during this season is... as good, bad, or indifferent as people have said he's played, he still had chances. And like you said, what's happened? Last year he was scoring goals, squeezing them in from all angles. He had no business scoring. This year, they're hitting the post and going the other way. They're hitting the keeper. They're getting deflected.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that's it's a very, very fine line. He could have scored another 10 more goals, without a doubt, but it just hasn't happened. But he's still up there in the scoring charts.
Well, he's still up there. You rightly say that, Paul. And what he's contributing to the team as well. And, I think as a team, that you know that if you've got that front three, you're going to get goals. In fact, I think I saw a stat. They're actually ahead of the tally from goals-wise last season.
Right.
Front three than this season, what they were last season. So, if one of them's not delivering, which has probably been Mo Salah, he certainly hasn't delivered what he delivered last season. Mm. The likes of Mane's been stepping up. Firmino's back on the goal scoring charts as well. So, with that front three, you've always got a likelihood. And especially in big games, because in big games, the chances come few and far between. And it's when you take these chances, that's the difference. That's what makes the difference. And I think with that front three, Liverpool have always got that opportunity to nick a goal. And, with the defence being so solid and sound at this moment in time, it always gives them an opportunity in games where maybe they've not been playing that well, but maybe they've been digging it out a little bit and under a little bit of pressure. You've just got that little bit of ability up front to take advantage of that.
I must say, I'm going through the team in my head thinking, you have got some big players now, some serious talent. The fullbacks are outstanding. We know about Virgil van Dijk. Firmino made a tackle in the second half, in his own half, that started an attack. He would be a nightmare to defend against. But I wanted to ask you about Jordan Henderson. He seems to be assuming the mantle of the captain of the team, that Steven Gerrard thing. I think it's really starting to happen for him now.
It's never been easy, that. I think it's always weighed a little bit heavy on his shoulders, as it would. I mean, how do you replace a man that was Mr. Liverpool? It's a big ask, and he's found that maybe a little bit harder than maybe what he thought he was going to do that. But there's been a little bit of a change in role for Jordan Henderson in the last couple of weeks, and I think he's relishing that, to be quite honest with you. He's getting far more advanced. And I think when you look at the two goals, I mean, he obviously put the cross in for Sadio Mane's first goal, but the little run that he made to just create the space for Mo Salah to come inside on that left foot, which probably it went unnoticed. It was only a 5-10 yard little dash, but it did open up the space. And I have to say, in the last 2 or 3 games, he really has been impressive, Jordan Henderson.
Yeah, he has. Now, one question about Celtic as well. Neil Lennon, it looks like odds on to be the manager going forward for Celtic. He knows the club, doesn't he?
Well, he knows it inside out. He's been there before. Been very successful there before as well. So it looks like an automatic fit, doesn't it?
And,
I think Celtic, as we've seen already, they're still ahead of all the rest of the teams in Scotland at this moment in time. And luckily that continues for the Celtic supporters, but I'm sure Steven Gerrard and Rangers will have something to say about that next season. I think it's always healthy if you've got competition, and Celtic for the last, 9-10 seasons, probably not had that sort of competition. So look to next season, and I think Rangers are certainly strengthened, and I think they'll be a major force again. But from all Celtic fans' point of view, we hope it continues that Rangers don't get that better.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I totally understand what you're talking about. Gary, nice to speak to you.
Cheers, lads. Thanks
so
much.
See you. Gary Gillespie there, former Liverpool defender. Elegant defender as well,
yeah,
Gary.
Yeah, he's a very good player. Always
yeah, lovely. And because I was talking about Virgil van Dijk.
Yeah.
But we were watching, you weren't here Friday, I was talking to Martin Allen. We're talking about Koulibaly, who's the Napoli centre-half. Decent enough player, right? They're talking about £75 million quid for him. If he's worth £75 million, Virgil van Dijk's worth three times that.
But therein lies the problem. That is the benchmark has been set now for a centre-half. If anyone thinks they're any half-decent, that is where it starts. £75 million.
Yeah, but I'm saying that in the end, what you want, what everybody wants is Van Dijk.
Is Van Dijk.
And exactly Van Dijk is not £75 million. He's going to be £200 million.
He's worth so much more.
He's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And he's one of those players, and you tell me, I'm assuming there are players in the team who make everyone better.
Yeah, they do. He's one of those. He encourages people. He encourages those defenders. You look at Robertson. 10 times better than he was.
Yeah.
Alexander Arnold, whoever plays alongside him, Gomez got in the England squad. Lovren looks a decent player. He does, he's worth his weight in gold.
Yeah, and he could lead Liverpool to the title. They're currently a point ahead of Man City. Man City have a game in hand. They continue. Well, they've got Champions League games. Little matters of quarterfinals in the Champions League. And then they get on with the Premier League next weekend.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.